Mr. Green is a longtime companion of former Governor Bert T. Combs and served as his driver during his gubernatorial campaigns and during his gubernatorial term. The interviewer is Dr. Richard Freed from Eastern Kentucky University.
I find it very interesting. Let me just, I'm going to set it down there. Start just by asking for a little biographical information just about you. Where are you from? How old you are?
I was born and raised in Sandy Hook, Kentucky, in Edgewood County. And went to school at Moorhead. I finished high school at Sandy Hook and went to school at Moorhead. From that time, I guess, on, of course, that was the first line of service after that. Went to trucking business for a while. Then I went into service in the Navy. Went out of the Navy, built it with a partner with Kirk Davis, who at that time was in the schools and everything. We built a moving picture building, restaurant, rental property down in San Diego, which I later sold to John Keck. After John Keck had been Commissioner of Highways and Inspection and all that. About the same time, I guess that was in 48,
go ahead.
Let me back up a minute. Right after 48, 50, well, when Earl Clemens was elected governor, when was he elected?
48?
I guess he was elected in 48.
48.
He succeeded, he followed Simeon Willis.
In 48.
Shortly after that, I left.
It was 51, 55.
I believe, though, it was 54 when I ran for representative from that district up there. At that time, that district was Everett and Lawrence County. We had two counties in represented the district. And I was elected twice. The second term I was pulling, Bert started running for governor. Again, this was his second trip out. And I believe that the first time that I, first time I ever met him personally, it was at John Keck's home in Sandy Hook.
When do you think that would be? That's when you met him?
Well, that was, I'd say that would have been in 57, I guess, or so. He'd been defeated and was getting ready to run again, or hoping to get in position to run again.
Mm-hmm.
And he and John Keck were very close personal friends. They'd both been in service together. John was encouraging him to run, and many, many others. And he finally agreed to make a speech to the Kiwanis Club in Sandy Hook. And John was to help with the outline of topics for him to talk on. So in effect, John had written him a little speech. That's what it all boiled down to. That he thought that the Kiwanis Club would buy anyway. It's primarily on education. And Bert showed now that John's home. He invited three or four of us down there to meet Bert before he went up to the Kiwanis Club. Then he made this little talk to the Kiwanis Club. Now that was my first experience with Bert Combs.
Do you remember anything from that? Is anything stricken your mind?
No, not a thing. Other than the fact that his entire talk to the Kiwanis Club, not entire, but by and large, was on education. He was...
Even then, he was
talking education and how bad it was needed, and particularly in the mountains and so forth. Now, that was my first experience with Combs.
Were you in the legislature at that time?
I guess I was. Hell, I don't remember. It's been so long. I ran for the legislature in 44, and it was about 44-5. And within the legislature when Combs was elected, I ran two terms. Lexington.
But they were very far apart.
Well, 44
and
45?
I meant
54. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Walking.
I was in the legislature when he was elected governor.
Okay.
When he got the nomination.
Okay.
And was elected.
Mm-hmm.
So
you were there.
It was about 4 years before then, because my term expired in January when he took office. I was going out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I went into his office. I guess they called me an administrative assistant, but I didn't have very much administrative duties. Was basically a troubleshooter.
Okay.
I've been in every county in the state of Kentucky with him at least once, and some of them three times, some of them twice. I've traveled with him approximately 18 months on the road.
Well, you said as part of the campaign.
As part of the campaign.
So when he was running, you were really his companion.
That's true.
Most of the
time. And the way that occurred, I really don't know who recommended me. He never did tell me, I never did ask him.
Mm-hmm.
But he called me in Sandy Hook, and he opened a little office in Lowell and was running, but he was having trouble by himself. At that time, I believe that Barclay Sturgeon from Prestonsburg, he was the brother of Bill Sturgeon. Barclay was going with him when he could, helping drive and so forth. But, of course, Barclay was practicing law, and he couldn't devote the time to it.
Mm-hmm.
I got a phone call one day, and to me it was just out of the clear sky, and it was Bert. And he wanted to know if I'd be interested in coming to Lowell and spend some time in his headquarters. And of course I was. I was very much for him. And at the same time now, I was running for representative again myself. That had been my second term, I guess, when I was running. But anyway, I was running for representative. And
now I
want to
get my chronology straight. You were running for your second term. So that would have been 55, because you say when he became governor, you went out of office.
I went out of office when he was active for the first year of that year he went out, and I went out.
So that would mean that...
And he wasn't, see, he wasn't sworn in. He was sworn in December of, I guess that was
59.
Yeah. And I was elected in 58, and he was elected 2 years ago. House. I elected in 58, I guess.
Okay.
Second.
Two terms, 2 years
yeah.
each.
Yeah.
And anyway, I'd been in headquarters about 2 weeks and I couldn't tell that I was accomplishing anything. We didn't have any. We had no money. Absolutely no money at all. We had one room with a little ante room to it of sorts. And no telephone other than the house phone. Now, that's the first 2 or 3 weeks that I was there. John Keck was brought in there. In fact, he got there about the same time I did. John was sharp, wasn't any question about that, and always was. He's dead now. But John Keck stood good. That's what I'd do for the telephone. They put some telephones, put some phones in there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way we started.
I'm going to interrupt occasionally when there's some things I want to ask you about, if you don't mind.
Don't mind a bit.
First of all, you say it was out of the clear. Did you ever figure out why he called you? Did you ever tell
No, him? I don't. I had my own opinion, but that's all it was.
What do you think?
I think Henry liked me, and I was in the legislature the term that they, you don't remember these things, but they, Happy was governor. And they were trying to rip the treasures off because Henry was on the other faction, you know, I'd been elected too. And I was on Henry's side of the thing. Henry always liked me, and I worked hard at it, trying to help him. They called it the Carter Ripper Bill at that time. And we beat Happy on this Carter Ripper Bill and on some other right open legislation.
Well, let me ask you
another. And I guess Henry, you know, he appreciated that. And Henry thought that I had a wonderful personality. And of course, at that time, I was younger. I was 40 years old. So,
quick question. When were you born? How old are you now?
I'm 71 now. I was born December 3rd, 1916.
So you're about 5 years younger than
me. Approximately 5 years younger than Cone.
Yeah.
And he lets me know that occasionally, yeah. Well, I got confused, and the group wanted to end. Somebody asked how old Cone was. Well, he's 6 years old and I am. He stopped me right quick. He said, no, I'm not. I'm 5 years old.
We'll look to your Bible for an extra year or two. So then the other question I was going to ask you about going with him, why did you go with him? You remember?
Yeah, I remember. When Happy Chandler ran for governor the first time, I was Tom Ray. I was young. I was only 16. My father just died. But my mother was for Tom Ray, and she was, I can tell you, really the real reason she was for Tom Ray. Reuben LaFoon, under Reuben LaFoon's administration, they had a sales tax. Well, when the county, when my father died, he had no help for the poor or disabled, no state help, no federal help. And he'd been in business there for years, and they just would not let him go out of his store when he knew them, and knew that they were desperate. So the county ended up owing us $30-some thousand, and that was a whole lot of damn money then. Mm-hmm. And when he died, that's approximately what the county owed us, which he knew that he never collect. And he knew that from his money. So, when Reuben LaFoon passed that sales tax, the 2% sales tax, and I can't remember exactly how much, it seemed like it was 1%, but anyway, a percentage of it come back to the county where it was collected. And on the strength of that, the county had started paying us a little of what they owed us. So consequently, my mother was very much for Tom Ray. We were going behind Tom Ray, and she knew the sales tax payment back. She was collecting what the debts the county owed us that way. Now that was, I assume, my main reason, because I was against Happy. That's what it all really boiled down to then, because Happy beat Tom Ray by the way of the sales tax, and he swore they never would have another in Kentucky, and so on and so forth. That was why I was just against Happy.
So a lot of it was just pure politics, the old anti.
90% of it was just pure politics.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
Well, it really boiled down to it. I didn't know Combs that well then, except that he was a mountain boy, you know. But then that don't always. It doesn't always make you intelligent, you know, to be a loud boy.
But you did feel a kinship with him because you shared that.
That's true. Now, he called me, he asked me, and I went down there. Then about 3 weeks or so later, he come in to headquarters from down, I don't know where he'd been, Western Kentucky someplace. I believe Barkley Sturgill had been with him, but Barkley couldn't go any longer. So he come in and asked me if I'd be interested in traveling with him rather than staying at headquarters. I said, I'd much rather. That's because you didn't stay in this headquarters.
You didn't like, I'm going to check this thing, I want to make sure.
I've had some problems with this thing.
Well, you didn't like the idea of sitting in the headquarters?
Well,
you might sit still.
Of course, at that time, I didn't know as many people across the state as I later did, you know. So, primarily what you were doing then was calling people and making contacts. People in Eastern Kentucky and really in my legislative district was the only kind of people I knew.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't, you know, really knew.
Sure.
So Keck was more involved in being on the telephone now and talking to various counties and leadership of various counties, because he'd been commissioner of highways and, you know, had some background for all the counties. And Ruth Murphy, who had been Holmes' secretary for a while, Ruth now, she was very good. She sat on that phone and was very dedicated, very loyal. Before there ever any money there at all.
When you first went to work for him, you were not basically barely being paid, I would guess. They were not
paid nothing. They, when I started traveling with him now, he would pay my hotel bill and my meals when we ate together. That wasn't all the expense though, you see. We'd go into various towns, you know, and of course I was trying to keep a schedule, which was impossible. Well, they make those schedules up in headquarters, and they didn't give you any length of time at all to get to the other one, and they didn't realize that you can't get a candidate out of a crowd, you know, just out. So I kept getting tickets and tickets and tickets from state police, and I kept, between the two of us, me and Bert, we kept getting them dismissed or thrown away. The first trip I made with him, was driving him, staying with him, was Fleming'sburg. I didn't know that he had sent John Keck into Mason County to, well, just to find out what he needed to talk about when he went into Mason County. You know, he had some advanced people going around, which at this point I didn't know about. I know that at this Fleming County Fair, I looked down over the field there, they had a little big tents up there, you know, and a lot of people. Bert was handing out cards and calling to them, and I was handing out his cards and calling to them. I looked down across the field and called, saw John and Keck coming up across the field and calling through a wire fence. Well, you'd have to know Keck. I'm sure you didn't know him. But he was quite a character, but he was intelligent and very smart. He liked that bottle pretty good, though. Well, he was from Sandy Hook at that time, see. He was born and raised in Indiana and Louisville, but he was practicing law in Sandy Hook. I'd been with him long enough that I knew when I saw him just about how many drinks he'd had. So I knew the cake was pretty full, you know, when I was coming across that field. And I met him. I had my first trip with Combs. And of course, I was scared. I was wanting to do the best I could for Combs and wanting Combs to know that I'd done the best I could for him. So I met Keck and I said, John, don't go up there in this crowd. I ain't been drinking. And Combs will know just the minute he sees you. He won't appreciate it. Swore to me he wasn't drinking up when I knew, you know, and I'd known him all for years. So anyway, he come on up there. He didn't mix with anybody or anything. He said, well, we got ready to leave. We were going back to Louisville, and John Keck said, I believe, well, let's go back to Louisville with him. He'd been mayor for 3 days of this. Rebecca Hoard was mayor over there then. And I think he and Rebecca had been drinking together for about 3 days or so. So on the way we got in and started, John was in the back seat. He was telling Combs, you know, he started out getting him a little breakdown on what he thought he needed to talk about in Mason County. Then he got off that completely. And well, I don't know if this ought to be on camera or not, but he said, you see his gray hair, he was prematurely gray. He said, Combsy, do you see this gray hair up here? Combs didn't turn around. He said, yeah, I know, John. Don't mean a thing. I had a 21-year-old last night, he said. Well, there wasn't any silence. Combs never answered. We rolled on. I don't know, maybe another 15 minutes or so. All of a sudden, Combs wheeled around and seats and goes, John, let me tell you something. If you intend to associate yourself with my campaign, you're not going to drink, and you're not going to fool these women and select this primary vote. John didn't answer. We pulled in that little town there then, and telephone booth on the corner, and Combs said, let me out, I want to call headquarters. So we got out of the car to call headquarters, and John punched me in the back, you know, and I turned around. When he was drinking, he sort of, it wasn't stuttering, he kind of repeated himself, is that, you think we got the right candidate? I said, well, I think so, Dick. I don't know about that. He thinks I'm going to do without licking women for 18 months, he's a damn boob. That's one of your anecdotes. Now, that's a true story.
Did he stop?
Well, I held on. He didn't stop Johnny.
Yeah.
And from that time on, I traveled with Bert then. We lived pretty hard part of the time. Biggest part of the time, really. We pulled into Lexington as the way up the campaign. Stay at the old, at the Springs Motel. The little room a little cheaper there, but the old spring, that's where. And I've been trying to muster up. We drive my car then. Bert's old car is worn out, and we were driving mine. And I've been trying to muster up enough courage to tell him that I broke. I told him this is how far I go. And I finally got the courage, you know, and I said, call me boss. I said, boss, let me talk to you a few minutes about some things. I'm not a quitter, and I think you know my reputation. I don't quit. But something has to give. Now, I owe over 3 months' grocery bill in Sandy Hook. I have a cousin, Van Green, that's carrying my family. I owe about 3 payments on my automobile. And I just don't know how long this is going on. You know, I had nothing coming in. Now, I've handled a little money in my life. I haven't saved any. So I guess I'm a bad manager. That's the status of it. He studied me and he said, well, if you're a bad manager, so am I. Go find the same shape. Everywhere both got the same shape. He said, now, can you hold on for another couple of weeks? I said, oh, yeah. I just didn't want to walk out here now. I wanted you to be thinking about something here when somebody replaced me. Could afford this a little better than I could. So in about a week and a half or so, go into Franklin, he's a guy at the country club. And we did. I don't know whether I guess there really is no harm in it. There wasn't anything wrong with it. So we met Bill May. And I had no idea why we were at the country club, you know. I knew he was one of us. Belong to country club. And Bill called me off to one side and gave me a standard credit card, gasoline credit card. And I said, John, will this help any? And I said, you better believe. He said, I'm going to tell you something else. I'm going to put you on my payroll. I can't pay you much, but about $400 a month. I can give you about $400 a month. Will that help? I said, every dime will help, Bill, because I just don't have any income coming in. Told my circumstances. So anyway, the headquarters said they hadn't started paying for my payments on my car. We drove my car in for a good long time. That wore out. And Bill had punished the gasoline card and then put me on his payroll. $400 a month, which wasn't a whole lot of money, but more money it is today, of course, but then it was not the kind. See, we pull into these counties and towns. You'd meet a group. Usually, you know, whoever you contact would have a group of people there to meet you. Well, Coleman would go off with some of the leadership, you know. Leave me with the other people who I had to entertain and out of lunch and so forth. And that I wasn't getting reimbursed for. I had to make arrangements to see if everybody stayed happy, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I've just gone my limit. That's what I was about to.
On all of that, I mean, were you gone all the time?
Did you 6 days a week, at least 6 days a week, sometimes 7.
And where would you go back? Would you go back to Eastern Kentucky? Or
I'd go back to Eastern, not unless it was Bert was going in that direction, using farming. I didn't know. We were traveling about 6 days a week, and we started at 6 o'clock in the morning. He tried to get started at 6 o'clock in the morning. And we'd try to check into as close to the next town as we could get, where we, you know, where we were going to be the next day. That night, we'd try to get checked in there. You know, we usually got in about 9 or 10 o'clock after we'd spoken someplace, you know, and then we'd go on to the next. Then we were on the telephone. It was mostly him, but a good part of the time I was helping. I was on the telephone placing calls or taking the calls for another 2 or 3 hours. So we wouldn't get in bed until, I'd say 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Then it was up at 6 o'clock and going again. And that went on for 18 months.
18 months, and y'all were basically nonstop.
That's about what it amounted to. And he ran a complete different campaign that time he did his first race. In fact, I reminded him a few times that he couldn't run that kind of campaign. We go to see enough people. We'd be driving along and see somebody over the field, tobacco field or whatever it happened to be, you know, and he'd stop right here. I'd stop and he'd crawl through that fence, go down there and talk to him a while and then back in the car. That kept us behind in some of our schedule too. But now he was working at this just that hard. He was determined that time now.
He really, yeah. I mean, there's no question. The first time he wasn't sure what he was doing.
First time he wasn't sure what he was doing. He'd been on the court field and they chose him to make that race, you know. I believe that Herb Smith, this is my information, and it's not firsthand. Herb Smith was from Holland originally, and with Bert was from Clay County originally. And Herb was pretty high on him, and he did have the reputation of being an awful fine judge when he finally made it on the Court of Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
And Lawrence Weatherby was governor, and Herb Smith was right close to Lawrence Weatherby, and Herb was one of the few Democrats in that kept on the 11th and 5th, there was something else. Anyway, in that district.
Yeah, Republican area.
Yeah. And he was what we call just about the Democrat congressman from that Republican district, because he was whatever he said, he called the shots. And he was begging Lawrence Weatherby to let Bert run. Because of his ability as a judge and so forth. And Lawrence was right high on Bert, so that's kind of whatever he is.
I have talked to him.
To Lawrence?
Yeah. And of course, it's certainly not higher, he's very high on him still.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks very much. So y'all really, it was hard work for 18 months.
18 months I was in my...
In addition to...
I was absolutely driving in a trance with the hell that driving period. It was just driving the instinct. I'd catch myself sometimes, well, I don't even know where I was.
Where did you, I mean, not where did you go? You went everywhere. Did you go all across the entire state?
All across the entire state. And each and every county, almost all of them twice, some of them three times. Now, Dick Swenson, usually, he rode with us when we were in the car. But Bert was flying, Dick flew with him. He was out in the plane with him. And I don't know about as aggravated as I ever was. I'd been driving about 12, 14 hours that day in Pike County. And Sandy Hawkinsmith was flying Bert, so they met Bert at that little airport that time up in Pike, you know. And getting ready to leave was going to Paducah. Dick strolled out of that car, you know, and he jumped in that airplane with him. I wanted to go and didn't say anything, but I was thinking that Bert would send him back to ride with me at least to Paducah. And he hauled out of the plane, Bert, and he said, I'll see you about 10 o'clock, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning in Paducah. And I'd been, like I say, been driving 12 hours.
He said that to you?
Yeah, that to me.
So he was going to fly and you're supposed to?
And I did.
That was
across the state, as far as you could go, and with no interstates. And,
no
mountain
parkway.
No interstates. It was just,
so how long would it have taken you to drive all the way across the state?
It took me about 10 hours, almost 10 hours.
Yeah, a lot of coffee.
And I drove, of course, like I said, I'd already been driving about 12 hours a day. I drive over 12 hours every day, really.
So was that... Basically, I imagine you weren't mad at him very often.
No, I wasn't mad at him then. I just thought he shouldn't let give me, let Dick just employ like I was, or I was, he should have ridden with me at least, keep the company.
I'm sorry. nobody I've ever talked to except for Happy wants to say anything bad about the man. I mean, people just really like him that much. But Sarah Walters was telling me, sometimes he forgets the details, and sort of thing that you're talking
he
about.
He does that. Yeah, that's true.
He won't stop and think about, well, wait a minute, you need to fly and let the other fellow drive.
See, that's true. And I know Bert didn't do this, this punish me or anything.
Right.
It's just that he had thought, it just didn't occur to him.
Yeah.
How long I've been driving, how many hours I was putting in, and how far that trip was.
I was going to ask you a minute ago. He worked hard, and y'all worked hard, because he really wanted it. Do you think he enjoyed campaigning the second time?
I believe I know he did. He started out a little stiff, like he was the first time. He was a poor candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But he started out a little stiff, and as time went on, because he ran longer this time, as time went on, you could see him limbering up, getting easier to him. I reckon he found out that they enjoyed it. But occasionally, you know, he'd be, these women in the crowd, you know, would be talking to him and like, when I first started traveling, he wouldn't lay his hand on one shoulder and very dignified that way. And later on, when I saw that he was doing a better job and he was losing up some, but he'd have his hand on his shoulder and he'd start patting on the back, but he'd slip his arm around his shoulder. And I don't know that he's a
human being.
And it, you know, it just kept getting a little more easy with it all the time. And he never would say too much about anybody, you know. Getting closer to the end of the campaign. You know, it was rumored, I don't know whether it's true or not. I don't know whether Burton was true or not, but that the money they collected during the Happy Administration, they had a 2% levy on all employees going to the slush fund. That they sent a good part of that to Cuba or someplace to safekeeping. You know, that was completely out of character for Burton. You know, I get amused, and at the same time, I think, well, you're completely out of character. It's not you. He got to the place where he'd, at the end of one of his speeches, for instance, you know, he'd start talking about that money that they collected from the employees. And that was after, you know, about the time that Castro took over down there. Mm-hmm. So Bert would tell this story about Happy getting down to the edge of the water, Atlantic, down in Florida. Down the edge of the water, you know, and begging, his hand was talking to the Lord and begging him to have Castro send that money back. Now, I don't know whether they had any money over there or not. Because it was widely rumored that they did. And I don't know whether they got it back or whether they didn't, or whether they had any of it or not. But it was completely out of character from Bert.
Yeah.
He just didn't talk about people much, but he got to the place where they demeaned him so much that I think that he.
Do you think, I sense maybe you disliked him enough that he might have taken some pleasure in it. Ultimately, even though it is out of character, he doesn't attack people. I mean,
No, I didn't. The one thing that we agreed on wholeheartedly, though, from the beginning, that Happy had exploited the Democrat Party, I believe, and so was Burke. Discussed it several times. Explored the Democrat Party more than any politician ever in the state of Kentucky. And supported that. He never had supported it. He lost the candidate or lost himself. He never supported the party. He absolutely explored it, but gave it nothing.
Tell me, when y'all were driving, was that a time that he would use? I suppose you split the driving some, you probably drive a little bit. But did you do it all?
I did it all.
You did it all. When you were driving, would he spend a whole lot of time just catching up on his rest, or was he talkative then?
I understand there was one other that could do it. However, I didn't travel with him. Bert told him to get in that car, because we were exhausted most of the time. We absolutely stayed exhausted.
Yeah.
And soon he was asleep, he'd lay back in the car, just completely relaxed, his eyes like snoring every once in a while. And by the time he got to the next town, he roused up, seemed like he just, like an alarm clock came with him, he'd rouse up and grab his phone and unscrew his hair a couple of times and jump out. But he could relax between those towns. Mm-hmm. And he'd tell me Alvin Barkley could, of course I never traveled with Alvin, but Alvin would do the same thing.
Would y'all, as you were traveling, if you leave a town, or before you get to one, would you talk about the strategy to who what you were going to
do? He didn't discuss that as much with me, occasionally. But he had to talk to somebody about it. Maybe he didn't on the telephone or so forth. He usually knew about what he wanted to do before he went into that town,
mm-hmm.
what he needed to do. He didn't always do it. If it was something he thought that shouldn't be done, he was pretty reluctant. He wouldn't. But if somebody had advised him, you know, on what he needed to do, he stuck pretty well, pretty good close to that.
My sense would be that he was better, would have been better with small crowds than large crowds. Is that true?
Well, I don't think there's any question about that. And one of the things that he did, and the first time that I remember him doing it, was in Hardin County. I tried to think several times if we ever did that before. But we were in Hardin County, and been there just a little while. I wasn't seeing as many people as seemed like, you know. So he asked, I can't remember who was helping him handle the thing in Hardin County, but he asked somebody if they thought they could get a little crowd out to the Country Grocery. He said, well, if you're going to be here another hour, an hour and a half, I can have some people there. So they did, and they had about 25 or 30 people in this little Country Grocery store, you know. And he did a remarkable job there. Now that's where he was.
Mm-hmm.
So he could shake hands on them, talk to them individually and personally, you know, and find out their problems and what they were thinking. Then from that time on, we did that occasionally. When it could be set up, you know, like we try to have a little meeting set up somewhere out 10 or 15 miles out of the county, see somebody's out in the country. But it never been a candidate for governor. That sort of thing.
Yeah. And it was probably natural as well as good politics. It was probably a natural thing.
It was natural. Yeah.
You didn't have to put on anything. Mm-hmm. Do you think he had to put on a little bit? Well, not put on, that's a bad term. I mean, it was probably different when he was in a town, in a county seat.
Well, to some extent, I guess.
He's comfortable with everybody.
He's pretty well comfortable with everybody.
Yeah.
And, of course, he don't... regardless of their status, he didn't pay much attention to that. That never did bother him. So he can carry on a conversation, you know. I didn't know at the time I started traveling with anybody. I didn't care about 87.
Do you think that's because he just knows a lot, or just because he's comfortable with people?
I just think the combination. Mm-hmm. I sincerely believe that Bert Combs is one of the smartest people that I ever met. And very, very few people know that. Or believe it.
Mm-hmm. I do, by the way. Nothing convinced me.
Can't remember who it was. One other person that could do it about as well as he did, the guy used to make a remark about it, but Combs can sit down here with you, and you don't realize what he's doing, and talk to you for an hour, and you have to, after he's gone, you try to analyze that, and he hasn't told you a doggone thing about what he knew, but he's picked your brain just as cleaner than his.
That's my biggest problem, trying to get information from him. Actually, that's not true. He'll give me information.
But now,
he's been very
good at that.
Yeah. If he doesn't want you to know, you're not going to know.
I'm going to know, and, mm-hmm. But for some way, he'll manage to get out of you just what he wants out of you.
He's master at
that. He sure is.
Yeah.
He's about the best. I only knew one other fellow. He wasn't in politics or anything that did a lot of that. Later on, I was talking to some of his friends. I said, "Now, I haven't spent a lot of time with Dennis Smith, and I don't know a thing that he knows. And I know that he knows everything I know." But now, Dennis Smith could do that, but it was too obvious. I mean, later on, you know, you begin to realize, But Combs, you never know.
Mm-hmm. But in terms of your relationship with him, that probably was never an issue because you were too busy just driving.
Yeah, I was. That's true.
Didn't have time for conflict. Did you have any conflicts?
Never had any conflicts. Wasn't any conflict. He'd chew around of gas. Maybe it was bullying me. And I had plenty of time to put gas in. It just slipped my mind. But he was going to fly from Bowling Green back to Louisville or someplace. And I was waiting outside the way at the car and pulled around and waited for him. He got in, and we hadn't gone 2 blocks on our gas. And he gave me a pretty good chewing. He said he didn't have to, you know, inform me that I didn't have to wait till the hand showed empty before I put gasoline in the car. And so, well, he gave me a pretty good chewing out. I got even with him on that later on because I was wrong and knew I was wrong, and there wasn't much I could say. But actually, when I was governor, he invited his old office staff over to his. That's when he and Julius Riley were practicing together there in Lexington, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he invited us over there one day for lunch. Two or three, including me, went with Bert in his car. After going to the country club there, had lunch. Now, he hadn't gone about two blocks, he ran out of gas. That tickled me. Oh, I was so pleased over that stone. And I said, this once you know, it can happen to the best of us. You know, when you chewed me out, Bowie did. Well, now he said, man, you got less excuse for it than I did.
He said that?
Yeah. And I guess that was true. He, I had no excuse. I just absolutely forgot to put gasoline in the car.
But, well, he's also able to laugh at himself, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. That's another really wonderful quality, man. Anything come to mind when he did have to, when he put his head in a bucket or something, and where he screwed up?
No, not really. No. He wouldn't. He didn't make many mistakes down on that campaign trail.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to get to it, but did you ever do this with him again, for example, when he ran against
Ford? No. I made the first trip with him, just sort of accident. Henry Carter's funeral was that day, and Sandy Ottenwill was going to fly him, and I wanted to go to West Liberty to the funeral. And it was sort of hitched a ride, you know, and he flew me in Combs and Helen, with Helen, you know.
Okay.
Flew us up to West Liberty to that funeral, and then on the Hazard, that was his first speech. That's when Ford beat him.
Mm-hmm.
That was his first speech that I knew anything about. And Bill Sterling was supposed to have that organized. And it happened in the gymnasium. And there wasn't over, I guess, 350 people there, and that kind of shocked me. That's Columbus territory, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of shocked at that. I didn't know whether Bill hadn't put it together right or whether there was something wrong.
Could you tell? I mean, there obviously was a tremendous difference in those two campaigns.
Oh, there was.
I think he's told me he just wasn't hungry enough.
That's exactly right.
Or it was
hungry. Well, he would get on me pretty good, I guess. No, I think that he was overconfident in this last one he ran against Ford. I think he was completely overconfident. And he tried to change his image a little to get the younger vote.
Mm-hmm.
He thought he was getting old. And he needed to pick up some younger vote somewhere that he wasn't getting or didn't think he was going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to pick that younger vote up, and he concentrated almost entirely on that younger vote a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we disagreed. I had no objection to him getting the younger vote. I just couldn't understand why the younger vote and the older vote couldn't work together. That didn't make a lot of sense to me. He spoke to the Democrat district, I guess it was convention, and a meeting of the district, the Democrat women ring, and I guess they held that at Ken Barr. It was there on the lake, but the Ken Barr there. Private place that Bill was still there. And the next day it was pouring the rain. I rode down with Russell Reynolds. I went involved in the campaign. I rode down there with Russell Reynolds, $25 dinner. And Bert did a good job, and the women, they were all pretty high on it. So, of course, he's there in Ford's territory, too. So, on the way back, I kept thinking, and I was running into them day after day after day, the old Combs, the original Combs people. They hadn't heard from him. They hadn't heard anything from his headquarters. Absolutely nothing. And I kept thinking about that. Well, I think they're going to vote for him. This is my thinking on it. But I don't think they're going to get out there and tire themselves, you know, like they did before. And we got into Louisville, Russell and I, and I said, Russell, I'd like to stop in Louisville. I want to go down and talk to Combs, his headquarters. It was pouring the rain. They had all the way. We parked in an old 5th Street parking garage up there, and then walked in down to 4th Street to that hotel, his headquarters. I was so wet, and he was with somebody, I didn't know what it was, Gaines Williams, somebody, I didn't know at the time, you know, they said with somebody, it'd be feeling a little while. So I sat down and waited. And when he come out, he wanted to know what I had on my mind. I said, boss, I'm going to throw some things out. I want you to think about it. And I explained to him that I'd kept running into his old contact men and Athens people, and nobody ever heard from his headquarters. I said, you know, they elected you, and they're hurt. Well, he stayed there overnight, and he said, what's your recommendation? I said, my recommendation is that you said we've got 4 or 5 million across the state, so they won't have to travel too far, none of them, and have you a little speech, or you can give each one of them, each one of those areas, you have your little talk, let them all work on some particular project, so they'll know that they're part of this campaign. Mm-hmm. And you need to tell them that you wouldn't be running this race, that they meant for them having in the last race, you know, that sort of thing. Well, he stood there a minute, and I don't know, he was in bad humor, I guess. He said, if I had to talk to people like that, I don't have any business in this race. Well, I got it, it's up to you. And I got left. And I got to the elevator, and he called me back, and bless you, and he said, if you think that's important, if you think it's that important, why, go ahead and put them together. And I said, no. If it wasn't that important to you, and you don't think it's that important to you, there's no point in me wasting my time and yours. And he said, who's got all the lists? I said, well, I don't know who the hell I've ever listed, ever written down. All their names, addresses, their phone numbers, and I've had them ever since I started campaigning. They did that. But now he never did do that. He never did.
You think it was overconfidence? Or
I think it was overconfidence.
You think he had to do it? That's very... So that whole... He hasn't talked that much about that race, but then obviously that's the one time when he wasn't...
He himself. He wasn't himself. Because I know that he had, you know, Rick Thomas more tell us than that. He had to know that there was something bothering him. Had to be. But he never did follow through on it. He never did call me. And I said, John, I appreciate if you'd be able to do that, so I never did.
Yeah. I mean, I know this would be conjecture on your part, but do you think maybe his personal life, you know, his marriage?
I have no question about it. I'll tell you what, and I never did, I've never said this before, but I've been telling him something a hell of a lot. The first trip, now that had a trip, for example, as his first speech, and it was at this point, the crowd and so forth. But as we come out of the gymnasium, he said, John, I've got some rooms reserved up here to motel on top of the hill there, I got some room reserved up there, and some people coming up there to meet me. I'd like to use 3 of them for me and not let them all be there at one time. Put a hole, you know, hold them back until you see them come out of the room and you send some more down. So, well, I did that. But when that was all over, I went on down there. And it was me and Russell Reynolds, Sandy Hawkinsmith. Sandy was from here, and Russell was from Jackson. And we walked on down there, of course, to spend some time with Combs. And Helen was in that with him, of course. I liked her, you know, Webb. I had nothing against Helen, one way or the other. I didn't know Mabel very well. But I understood the big problem with Mabel better than a lot of people did. And she was pulled back up on that bed, you know. You know how I thought it went, I found it, and she'd ask me that. You know how it went. It either wasn't organized or there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. And she said, I tried to keep him from coming up here, John. He had no business up here. The boat's not here. He needs to be in Covington, Louisville, and so on, you know, put on metropolitan areas, you know. And she said, he got no business campaigning up here. That's the one down I heard work absolutely center now. He said, I'm tell you. If I can campaign with my folks and my people and my territory, then I will be there. And now he made Russell Reynolds mad in hell. Now, of course, I didn't bother me that much because I was just old at her. He didn't make him, but she did. I mean, she made him mad like that. We got on the outside, he's mad at him. If he's going to put up with that, but anyway, because Russell was pouring, he ended up being pouring with that. She walked up to him right in front of the Freedom Hall, Louisville one day, and he had about 5 people was actually going to dinner. And I was standing way off to one side. I was going to speak to him before he got in his car to go where he was going, you know. And she absolutely got him with an arm and pulled him away from all the people, you know, and said, you've got better things to do.
So there's no doubt. I think so, yeah. From what you're saying, I kind of saw a little of that. There's no question at all. She had a lot to do with this whole change of attitude. And actually, John, if you're... And I think she was more than having that young boy kick. I mean, I'm for the young boy, but I have to understand why they couldn't both work.
Yeah. You know, I mean, even work together. And that's what one of the things happened there, you know, that old revolt, and the ones that stuck the neck out for him. I think they voted for him, by and large. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think they got out there and told themselves. They just let the young people have it. That's what it looked like he wanted them to do, so.
So he did, first of all, he just didn't have the fire, and second of all, Helen was really...
I think she was fired.
...coming up the works. Yeah. Can I ask you about the... he's told me about his wife, first wife, Mabel, and that she was not happy when, you know, when the move came.
She was never, never happy as a governor, but she just wasn't cut out for it. And of course, for some day before that, he had a little problem with her drinking, you know.
Yeah.
And it didn't improve any lighter here. That was, like I say, I probably know more about her, that sort of thing than most people. She was not, Mabel was not helpful. She was a good woman. I mean, you know, she was a very good woman, but she was not helpful to him as governor.
I'm trying to get the picture that Lois almost was the first lady.
She was. I was the Lois, the most sweetest girl in the world. Yeah. Lois, so she just blew up under me. Huh?
Yeah.
Now, of course, I wouldn't want Lois to know that I felt that way about Mabel, but she was, but absolutely she was no help to Bert as first lady.
I'd be glad to turn it off for something that I'd like to do. That part I've kind of picked up on, and yet I can't ask him, Judge, for specifics, although he told me the drinking. Can you give me some specifics about that without...
Well, no, I really don't know this.
Just, or is it just that she just didn't want to be around?
She just didn't like the crowds, and she didn't, to her, she tried to keep herself practically isolated over in that mansion all the time she was in it. She did. I mean, she just didn't like parties, didn't like crowds. I know I had a terrible time trying to take her and help her pick out her inaugural dress. And it took me 2 weeks. I had her in Cincinnati, every place. Her sister Minnie was with her. I think Minnie's dead now. Mabel wouldn't buy one because it cost too much. She fell with it. Now, Minnie would try to get her back. Something nice, you know, Mabel wouldn't spend the money on it. Took her forever to find out what she finally wore.
Do you think part of it was just the
she was just that frugal.
Negative, and also that frugal, but also the negative feeling.
I think probably so, yeah. I don't know that, but...
Yeah. Did you maintain a real close relationship when you obviously you did, all throughout his gubernatorial years, right?
Well, my office. Of course, I heard him say one time that he never didn't know how I got in that office. But it was vacant. It was right beside the elevator, I don't know if you know how
in the Capitol.
In the Capitol building. And at one time, there had been a little small office in there for, well, Lawrence and Weatherby and someone even back before him was a press release secret. Of course, the government had gotten larger, you know, they just had more man and they kind of go over there. So I'm wandering through there and found that little office and the door opened between it and the other office. I just moved in. I didn't ask anybody. Nothing, I just moved in. I figured that I'd been with him long enough that if he questioned it, I'd say, I did, I learned this. Mm-hmm. So, he had any questions. Later on, I don't know, for a couple of years later, I didn't really know how John got in that office to start with. Well, if you looked around, you found me. I moved in after you moved in the other one. I moved right inside of you.
Did
Did you see him a lot, then, because you were that close?
Oh, yeah, I saw
him. And also, you were just sort of...
Well, really...
You said your main job was sort of like troubleshooter.
That's what it was, really.
Firefighter.
The door stayed open between us most of the time. I had a battle with conversation. Of course, now he closed that door occasionally. But, well, it louvered. It louvered those. So a battle with conversation on that other door that I could hear. We had a delegation, it was a mountain delegation, maybe out in the Mexican county. Show up down there one day, there was five of them. One of them was superintendent of school in the county, and the other was a barrister of the division, see? And one of the fellows that managed Burt's campaign in that county. Then they had a sheriff's race, and that fellow that managed Burt's campaign, and who at that time was having a package for Burt in that particular county, would not support the Democratic county for sheriff. The Burt sent me up there to find out if that was true. And it was. I come back and made him a report. And he sent Dick Swanson. He thought maybe I was too close to the situation. Dick come back and made the same report. I was sitting in that little office, you know, and of course I had a buzzer on the desk. We didn't need it. All we had to do was just talk about what we were talking about. So John didn't need you in here or something, but he had that little buzzer there that he liked to use. He'd buzz me. So I stepped inside and he said, this delegation from this county is sitting out here waiting on me. And that's the one time I like you to be in here. When they come in, I said, oh, I see. He said, see if you can get old Dick Swanson, too. Well, I ran Dick's down. We were both sitting in the governor's office when the delegation came in. And he sent for them. I sent for this package man. And he brought the others with him. And he started talking to him. He said, I understand that you refused to support the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party elected me. And you have my package. I understand you refused to support. He said, no, no, brother. I support the Democratic Party. So Burt turned around and went with me, and he said, Johnny, what about that? I said, I don't think he'll deny I called his name. I said, I don't think he'll deny that I support him Roy Holbrook. And he said, oh, hell no, I don't deny that. And I don't call it voting the party when I vote Holbrook. And Burt said, I do, because the party elected me. And I'm just going to remove the package, take the package away from you, and give it to Holbrook. That's what it is. Well, one of the fellows sitting over there was the nephew of this fellow he's talking to. And he bounced up right quick, you know. He walked across in front of the desk where Burt was sitting. And stopped in front of him and he said, I've always heard you call you mad. It's called Little Jet. But you're a damn sight smaller than I than a little jet. So he started walking all around the end of the desk and toward me, but only he had his hand in his pocket. And I'm watching him pretty close, and by the time he got to the end of the desk, where he got around, where he'd go around the desk, two birds, you know, I was over there beside of him. And he started out with a knife. And I called his hand. And I said, oh, now you know better than this, and you don't belong in here. Let's go. But he didn't put up much of an argument. I mean, I took him all out in the corner and left him out there. I said, don't come back in here, this old. And he didn't.
You think he was
going to
go ahead and do it?
I don't think they had a question about it. He was hoping he had to pull it out of his pocket.
Well, you missed the rest of that meeting. I wondered how it went on after that. My God.
Well, why not more to it? He just had taken the tour. He told us, you know, before we started there, they were taking the package away from him.
So the meeting was over?
The meeting was really over.
Whoa.
They hung around in there a few minutes, and he was ready. That's all he wanted to do was tell them that they no longer had the package.
Yeah. Did you talk to him after this attempt?
No, I never mentioned him. He never mentioned it. I never mentioned it anymore.
Well, when you say troubleshooter, that's the case, you really were a troubleshooter.
He sent me the first troubleshooting I did was in Western Kentucky, entirely in Waterfield home. County. We had tried to find a chairman down there, which was a little hard to do. That was Harry Lee was his opposition. It was a little hard to find a chairman. But we finally, and the fellow who had been aligned with that faction, Larry Faction, all the years, he just wouldn't take it. But he told various forms, and I just really wouldn't take it. Well, he finally suggested this farmer, a young fellow, he was a farmer. So Bert got together and they agreed. The young fellow would manage the campaign, and then that little Dewey Johnson, the older fellow, had been lying there, factual, and that Dewey would advise him along, you know, on the package and that sort of thing, and that Dewey could have some of the package, but the young fellow was going to be the package man. Well, this boy had made some commitments, which you had to do, you know, as a campaign, you know, the opposition's home county, and you had to make some commitments. And he'd told us, or told me, and I'm sure he told Bert the same thing several times, you know, that he had to pick out a veteran chairman or something like that and make some commitments to him. Well, it ended up with Dewey, but Johnson wanted to run the old damn show. He was the old head, and then, you know, this boy wasn't getting, you know, they were strong. And Bert, they had letter after letter after letter. They had a stack of letters on Bert's desk.